And now, Jalen and Jacoby.
We're the Pop Patrol. Head to the dirt.
Gotta give us what we want. Gotta give us what we need.
Worry about my posse getting jumped. Cause if we ever do, yo TB, pop the trunk.
Cause we make a pop the trunk and hit the switch.
Now act stupid, I'll pop the trunk. Now give me your ba-boom.
Welcome to Jalen and Jacoby. Jalen Rose is out, but we have the honor and the pleasure of being joined by some great guests. Nick Friedell is here. And later, Jessica Mendoza will join us to break down everything that's happening in Major League Baseball. So now, you remember Paul George was talking to Rachel Nichols, and he said that when they signed that four-year deal, it was just an understanding, it was a mutual understanding that it was going to be sort of a one-year experiment to see where they went and how it all played out. Well, that's what Paul George said. Sam Presti had a different take. Let's listen to the Thunder GM.
He'd use the term mutual. I wouldn't necessarily agree with that, because that would infer that we were wanting to trade Paul George, which I think most people would agree that probably wasn't on the top of our offseason priority list. But I would say that it was not adversarial at all. And I also fully respect the way that it was handled.
Nick, what do you make of Sam Presti's comments?
Jacoby, everybody's been in Sam Presti's shoes at some point. He didn't want the breakup to happen. That's exactly what you say when you don't want the breakup to happen and you're sitting there going, oh man, you know, I still have those feelings in here. I didn't want to let this go, but if you say so, it doesn't have to be really bad. We can exchange our stuff and we can go on our separate ways. But everybody's been where Presti is in the moment, and Presti is the guy that did not want that relationship to end.
Do you feel like the Thunder were expecting to run it back with the same sort of, you know, foundation that they had in last year's playoffs that lost to the Blazers? Or do you think there was a plan all along to trade in their major superstars for trade assets?
I don't think they wanted to trade Paul George at all, Jacoby. You have one of the very best two-way players in the game. You have a guy who was in the MVP conversation all season. With Russ Westbrook, that contract is awful, but because of what he means to that city and that region, he was going to be there as long as he desired to be. But I don't believe that there was some grand plan by Oklahoma City to say, let's just press the button and blow it up now and see what happens. This is a team that wanted to stick together and make sure it had other pieces around Westbrook and George to make some noise, finally, in the Western Conference playoffs. It didn't happen like that. Kawhi came through, and once he did, well, Russ Westbrook said, I am out of here. I love you guys, but I don't want to stay long term. So the Thunder have to rebuild now, and they have to find a way to do what they couldn't do in the end, which is win a title. The problem is when you're in the middle of the country in a small market, that is incredibly difficult to do.
It is, and you and I have covered this league for a long time, and we both work in the media. We understand how managing the message is part of the job of a GM of a team like the Thunder. Why do you think he came out and said this and basically established that he did not want to trade Paul George but had to?
Because he wants to make sure that everybody feels like Oklahoma City is still a great place to be. And it wasn't their fault that Paul George decided he wanted to go be back with Kawhi closer to his hometown near Los Angeles. I think he is just protecting all the people that support that team. And he's protecting himself, Jacoby. Let's face it. This team had Kevin Durant, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Serge Ibaka, all in their prime or close to it, and they didn't win a title. And when you have to reset the button and you have to try again and find a way to try and rebuild towards a title, when you're that close to begin with, all the messaging has to be to protect what you tried to accomplish and didn't, and reset the narrative. And that's exactly what Presti did here.
Well, I'm a huge Steven Adams fan. I look forward to this offense being featured around Steven Adams. I feel like Steven Adams is going to have a career year this year. This is going to be the year where Steven Adams makes his MVP push. You remember where you heard it first. But moving on, I'm here in Las Vegas, and at Caesars Sportsbook, they have six teams projected to win over 50 games. The Clippers, the Bucks, the Nuggets, the Sixers, the Rockets, and the Lakers. Do you expect all six of these teams to win over 50 games?
Yeah, why not? I mean, this is when teams really can get feeling good about themselves in the regular season, and when you're trying to fit new pieces in, Jacoby, all those teams that you rattled off, they have stars. They have guys who have done it before. They have guys that have gotten to that level, and they know what to do in the regular season. The reality is, I don't think there are that many teams that can genuinely win a title. I know a lot of people disagree with me there, but I don't think that list is very long.
I disagree with you.
Well, there you go. I think it's like the Clippers, the Lakers have a chance with LeBron. The Bucks and the Sixers are really the only two teams in the East that I think have a legit chance to go not only get through the East, but potentially win a title. And I'm not that sold on Milwaukee at all, even though Giannis is awesome. I just don't see that many teams being able to get all the way through. The one team that I think is going to give a lot of people a lot of problems, not just in regular season win totals, but beyond, is Utah. And because they're in Salt Lake City, a lot of people are sleeping on them. But that's the team, I think, that is really going to push more than we think.
So I personally have the Sixers better than the Bucks in the Eastern Conference and the Lakers better than the Clippers. Literally everyone disagrees with me. Do you think the Sixers have a chance to beat the Bucks in the Eastern Conference?
Absolutely. I have never been sold on Milwaukee. I love Giannis's game. If he develops that jump shot, he's going to be even more incredible than he is. But Jacoby, you need pieces around him who can score in the postseason. And after Chris Middleton, I don't know who that is. You give Eric Bledsoe an $80 million deal, good luck to you. Like that is just a recipe for a total disaster in Milwaukee. So I'm with you on Philly being the team to come out of the East. In the West, the issue is when you have all the pieces you're trying to fit together, LeBron's going to be totally revitalized with Anthony Davis, but LeBron is going through a period in time where we don't know if he's going to be out in his full healthy form the way we've seen so many years before. So I still buy the Clippers. I think they are going to be a beast to knock out in the postseason. And when Doc Rivers gets that defense settled the way he wants it with Kawhi and Paul George and they're healthy, look out.
Well, going back to the Eastern Conference, we know that the Sixers and the Bucks are going to be good. I assume the Celtics will also find their way into hosting a playoff series. But who do you think will be in that fourth spot? Like, who is the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference in your mind?
Do we really care? This is the problem with the Eastern Conference. There's like a line. There's a line of demarcation of teams that have a legit chance. So I think Philly's right there. Milwaukee with Giannis is right there. Boston with Kemba Walker. They have a chance to come together and Tatum and Brown, maybe they're going to turn the corner. In the four spot, I would take the Pacers. With Oladipo coming back and you add Brogdon, you've got a core of guys who know how to play under Nate McMillan and they feel good about themselves and they should. I just don't believe that they can legitimately make an argument that they're going to go from potentially the fourth seed in the East to all the way through the East and then get into the finals. So after the third spot, and frankly after the second spot in my mind in the East, I think that's where the conversation should stop as far as potential teams to win it all. But in that four spot, give me the Pacers in their up and coming future with what they've built.
Well, unfortunately, I agree with you, Nick. RJ Hampton was a highly rated prospect coming out of high school. We all expected him to go to college. He did not. He went to the Australian Basketball Professional League. And then he decided to sign a sneaker deal with Li Ning. Li Ning, I think that's what it's called. And it's a 5-year deal, and he gets money even if he doesn't play professional basketball. Do you think this is going to be a blueprint that other players will follow moving forward?
Absolutely. Mr. Jacoby, where there is this kind of money and this kind of platform for these kids to come out of high school and do their thing before they get to the league, guys are going to follow everything that Hampton is doing. They've already done it with Darius Bazley. He set the tone with New Balance earlier this year. He gets drafted in the first round. If kids don't want to go to college, this is another outlet. And if they want to start building their brand and making big cash, this is a way for them to go. So I think this is the very beginning of what we're going to see is a major trend. And if you're running the NCAA, you're worried for a lot of reasons because it's never really run the way anybody wants. But especially with this, this is really going to start to hurt the product, I think.
I think so as well. But I also think this is bigger than just Hampton and Bazley. Like, I think this is going to be the end of the one and done. We've heard rumors about it, but do you feel like they will allow high school players to enter the NBA draft in the upcoming years?
It's only a matter of time. It's only a matter of time, Jacoby, because there are so many people in the league, the players included, who are trying to push this back into action. If a kid is ready to play and he feels like he can take his game to the professional level, there are too many other loopholes now to get out of that year of college. It's only a matter of time before Adam Silver and the people close to him find a way to allow high schoolers to declare again early, and the league's going to have to deal with it. I mean, let's face it. You and I have covered this thing a long time. The draft is more of a crapshoot than it's ever been.
Yep.
Everybody's talking about, oh, well, Sam Presti and OKC, they've got all these picks. Who cares? Some of them may hit, some of them may not, but nobody knows for sure anymore. The guys like Zion who come through, those are so few and far between, and we're not even sure if Zion is going to hit the way so many people want him to. So I think this is something that the league is looking through as we speak, and there will be a change here in the next few years, I'm sure of it.
So we both see it as inevitable. I mean, this is going to happen, but we're always talking about it as a positive, but what are the downsides to having high schoolers enter the draft? Like, what is the problem?
They're not ready. Mentally, I think more than physically. There's so much focus on, oh man, this kid's got to get in the gym and he's got to get 20 or 30 pounds on him and he's got to feel better and feel ready for an 82-game season. I don't think that's it at all, Jacoby. When you see guys who have been in the league for 5, 6, 7 years, and they're still struggling with the grind of everybody telling them they're terrible and people coming at them at social media, think about it, an 18 or 19-year-old kid going through that process. And I think that's what Adam Silver is most concerned about as they turn the corner now and trying to get high school kids back eligible for the NBA. It's the social aspect of all this. It's the mental game that nobody talks about enough. That's the biggest issue for the league. You're bringing in kids who may be physically developed, but not emotionally or mentally developed. And that's something that I think they are very wary of and they're very cautious about. But they know that the time is coming and they'll try to put a program in place that helps these kids the best they can to prepare themselves.
You make a really good point, Nick, because you look at previous drafts, there aren't that many can't-miss prospects. I mean, LeBron comes to mind, Anthony Davis comes to mind, but like there just aren't that many guaranteed can't-miss draftees. And when you lessen the age limit, that means it's even more of a crapshoot. Does all of this devalue draft picks moving forward?
You could take that side, or Jacoby, I tell you, they're more valuable than ever because you are into a salary cap where you know you're not going to have to pay these kids that much. So you're going to the table in New York City or wherever the draft is that year, and you're rolling the dice and you're saying, hit it, baby. Come on. One of these come through. And maybe you draft a star at the end of the first round, or maybe you draft a guy that you can build with for the next few years, and you've got him locked up on money that is very small compared to other guys you have to pay on the roster. So it is a total crapshoot. It's why GMs all over the league want to protect those assets. But at the same time, and this is in the context of the Thunder conversation, just because you have assets doesn't mean that everything's going to turn around the way that you want it to.
Nick, I love watching NBA basketball. I mean, sitting down on my couch and watching them in uniforms with referees and a real game makes me so happy. But you know what makes me happier than that? Watching NBA players play pickup basketball. We've got footage of Bradley Beal, CP3, Jason Tatum going one-on-one. Now, I feel like this makes a difference. Like, I feel like these workouts are significant and make them better players. How much do you think summer workouts change someone's game moving into the season?
You don't really believe that, do you? You don't really believe that, Mr. Jacoby?
I do.
Come on now.
I love this stuff. I love this stuff. I can relate to it. I can relate to it.
That's the problem. You can relate to it, but an NBA guy going and dominating in some local gym, like, they're supposed to do this. This is what happens all the time. I see these videos and I just laugh. This is like when we saw those videos a couple years ago of Carmelo. Man, he's knocking down all those jumpers in a row. He's ready to roll. Where's Carmelo in the league right now? And I love Carmelo. He can still help, but the team doesn't want him just because they saw him knock down a bunch of jumpers in the summer. So I understand that point of view, but in the grand scheme of things, I don't care what these videos look like. I want to see these guys prove it on the floor, and when they do, then I'll be impressed.
I just like that they're in a high school gym. I just like that there's a wall right underneath the basket. I like that there's little, you know, conference championship banners on the wall.
It's
I just like the idea that they're playing in a high school gym just like we all do when we play pickup. That's the part that I like. It just feels like real basketball to me. It's not that alien basketball that they play when they're in the NBA. Nick, you spent a lot of time with the Golden State Warriors last year, and they've gone through a lot of change. There's a lot different with the Warriors. They are now projected by Vegas to win 47 games. This is not a front-running team like it has been for years and years. What do you expect from the Warriors this season? Over or under 47 wins?
Jacoby, first and foremost, I would not touch that line. I think Vegas has nailed it because the Warriors could surprise a lot of people. And in talking to some of the coaching staff the last couple weeks, I think they're loving the fact that everybody's counting them out. And Steph and Draymond historically always thrive in roles where they're the underdogs. And it's been a while since we felt that about this team because of all the success they've had. But they still have so much talent. And if D'Angelo Russell clicks with that group, all of a sudden you're looking at a team that could potentially make some noise. Now, on the flip side of that, this is a group, when you look at the back half of the roster on a team that's hard-capped and you go, wait. Who's here? Alec Burks and Willie Cauley-Stein and a bunch of rookies and younger guys that nobody's ever heard of at this point. That's where you start to go, I don't know if I would touch it. And this is the key for any team in the league, but Jacoby, especially with the Warriors this year. If Steph or Draymond go down for any stretch early, goodbye. This team knows they need to play for a couple years down the road. They want to do well in the opening of Chase Center. They want to show that building is just as good as they have been the last few seasons. But if one of those two guys gets hurt early and they have to miss a month or so, everything is going to slow down. And they're going to say, let's get our picks in order. Let's play for a time down the road where we know we can be better together. And let's hope that we can show that we can get back to a championship level a couple years from now. So I see both sides, but if it's me going to the window, I'm looking for any other team besides the Warriors and their 47 at over-under.
Oh, see, Nick, I'm not afraid to give my opinion on camera. I think that they're going to be under 47 wins, and I feel strongly about this. This is going to be a bad year for Golden State Warriors fans. Now I'm going to say it on camera, and I'm asking you, over or under 47 wins for the Warriors?
If I'm picking right now, I'm going under because I think there are way too many variables here.
Me too.
And the rest of that roster, maybe they can develop some of those guys, but this year it's about keeping Steph healthy, keeping Draymond healthy, potentially getting Klay back and hoping for the best down the line.
So one of the biggest wild cards that will, you know, swing this season for the Warriors is D'Angelo Russell. I was shocked when they added him to the roster, and I'm not really sure how they're going to fit him into what they do offensively and defensively. What do you think about the addition of D'Angelo Russell?
Well, neither are they, Jacoby. That's the key here. I think there are a lot of people in the organization that went, Wait, D'Angelo Russell on a max deal? Okay, let's see how this goes. The key is that they didn't want to lose KD for nothing. And so now they have this piece. But with Russell, you don't know how he's going to fit defensively, and he's never been very good defensively to this point. So that would be my major concern. He, you know, pick and pop, he plays a different style. Can they fit him into what Steve Kerr has done over the years with Steph and Klay when he's healthy and Draymond running the show? I think they're going to want to move it up and down all the time, and they're going to want to play with a lot of tempo. But Jacoby, D'Angelo Russell, on paper, when you watch him, he doesn't seem to fit with what the Warriors have built over time. So I think he's going to have to adjust more than they're going to have to adjust around him. He's got to say, I'm ready to take a different step in my game, and I want to help this team as they wait for Klay Thompson to come back.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Klay Thompson because we've seen him rehabbing with his trusty dog by his side. And we expect him to be back, I don't know, like right after the All-Star game. What do you expect from Klay this season, late in the season?
February and March seem like the time when he would reappear. And Jacoby, when he does reappear, they believe that he's going to fall right back in line to what we've seen before, especially offensively. Shooting-wise, this is a guy who has all the confidence in the world, and he knows that he can make any shot from all over the floor, whether he's got both healthy knees in the moment or not. Defensively, I think that's going to be the struggle for him because he is so great on that end. He never gets as much credit as he deserves. Is he going to be able to move and shift the same way that he's done for so long in covering some of the best wings in the league? The people who watch him and have watched the rehab, they're confident he's going to come back sooner than later. This is not a situation like with Porzingis or Derrick Rose in years past where they go, let's be really cautious, let's hold him out. There is an expectation in the organization that he'll be back at some point after the break, but they want to be very cautious with how they bring him back in a year where they know they're not really going to contend for a title. So there are a lot of layers there, but I think Klay is going to surprise people with how good he can be initially whenever he does return next season.
We look forward to Klay returning, and I agree with you. You make a good point. I think offensively he'll be fine. I think it's the defensive part, staying with those wings and staying with the best players in the league. He always covers the best player on the other team. That might be where he struggles a little bit, but we'll see. We have some time for that. Now, we're very reductive here in the media. Like, we always just break it down to it's the bare bones. And right now, the conversation seems to be this. Who is the better team in Los Angeles? The Clippers or the Lakers? Me, personally, I'm a big LeBron guy. I have the Lakers. Who do you think is the best team in Los Angeles?
It has to be the Clippers. Are you kidding me? Come on now, Jacoby. This is not LeBron of three or four years ago, even. No. This is the Lakers team that didn't make the playoffs last year and that has added Anthony Davis, and he's awesome, and I think he's going to be great for him, but he isn't the kind of difference-making guy that's going to make you go, oh, the rest of the roster's fixed. Everything's good. LeBron's not going to get hurt anymore, and all these guys that you filled in around these two superstars, it's all going to work. The Clippers had the culture in place already. They had a team that busted their butts every night under Doc Rivers and had a defensive edge when they needed to. This team with Kawhi and Paul George is going to be unbelievable, Nick, if they stay healthy.
Are you familiar with a gentleman by the name of LeBron James? People have counted out LeBron James. He had 27 points, 8.5 assists, 8.5 rebounds. He's got Anthony Davis, Danny Green, Kyle Kuzma, and a gentleman by the name of DeMarcus Boogie Cousins. Like, I honestly think that I'm the only person that feels like the Lakers are head and shoulders above the Clippers in the Western Conference. And I'm alone on this island. And you know what? I want them to record this footage. I want them to keep this. And I'm going to play it back at the end of the season. And you will see that the Lakers will have a better season than the Clippers.
Jacoby. First of all, everybody's putting money on the Lakers. Everybody's going out to Vegas and they're saying, this is the team. That's why their odds are so low. But if you're sitting there and you had me, LeBron, okay, I think he's going to be revitalized and he's going to be a little better than we've seen. He's going to be closer to the old LeBron this year with Davis. Great. But here's where you lost me. Okay, LeBron James, he's great. Anthony Davis, he's going to be unbelievable. And then you said, Danny Green. Danny Green is your third star in
the
league.
He led the league in three-point percentage last year.
I don't care. If you want a team that has to win a title and Danny Green you have to rely on as your third guy every night, he's a really
nice
player.
Did he just win a title?
Because of Kawhi Leonard, who's playing on the other side. On the other side of Staples. Kawhi is incredible. Paul George, when he's healthy, is incredible. And then you have the rest of that roster that you know fits. And it's not even so much just Danny Green. Then you're going off on DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, Cousins, if he's healthy, Jacoby, he can help. But Cousins was healthy for a stretch last year with the Warriors, and there were games you didn't even recognize him on the floor. He wasn't doing much, and teams attacked him defensively.
Okay.
This is where you kind of lose me. Nick, on all the Lakers fans, kind of, they go, oh, this is all going to work. Nick, I don't see it.
Here's what, you know what this all boils down to? This all just boils down to 20 on-camera push-ups. The Lakers will have a better postseason than the Clippers. 20 on-camera push-ups, is that a bet?
Oh, yeah, but if I get through, like, five, I mean, everybody's going to be like, oh, congratulations. That's five more than you've done in years. So I'll have to trade for this moment. But it's a bet. The Clippers will do better in the end than the Lakers next
season.
We
will see. I cannot wait for you to do these push-ups.
The Jalen and Jacoby Podcast is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.
Nick, Kawhi Leonard chose to play for the Los Angeles Clippers. Well, apparently, people are upset about that. Joe Barden of The Athletic wrote this. He wrote, quote, privately, of course Masai's upset. Most in the Raptors organization are, at least to some degree. This is not some shocking revelation, as they are, after all, human. While they never felt misled, they did believe Leonard used them, this is my favorite part, as leverage in free agency. The Raptors will be gracious and appreciative in public. They want to be a destination for future free agents, after all. But they are looking at a rebuild more than a title defense, and they barely got to celebrate. Many are still processing it all. Nick, this is not just a Raptors thing. The Lakers reportedly feel the same way, that Kawhi kind of used them as leverage and made demands that may or may not be legal on the books of the NBA policies. What do you think about the Raptors' feelings with Kawhi going to the Clippers?
Of course they feel hurt. Their dream girl left them, Jacoby. This was the best relationship they've ever been in their life. This was everything they ever wanted it to be. This was their forever moment. And then it was gone. Just like that. So of course they're upset. And it cracks me up that these teams are saying he used him as leverage. Well, of course he did. He wanted to get to a certain place and he wanted to go with a certain guy. So he had to do whatever he felt like he had to do to make that happen. So the Raptors traded for a guy who only ever said he wanted to be in Los Angeles. Guess where he ended up? Los Angeles. I'm not crying for him. The title. Masai got exactly what he wanted, and they should feel great about what happened.
So this isn't just a Raptors thing. Like, we've heard that Uncle Dennis and other people made demands that were sort of like about planes and homes and access and things that were outside of regular free agency requests. Do you think that the NBA will crack down on these things moving forward?
They're going to try. But if you're a team that can get this kind of superstar talent in the fold, Jacoby, you do anything you have to do. Kawhi Leonard has shown time and again now that he is in the biggest, highest stratosphere there is of NBA superstardom. And he is a guy who can deliver championships. So if Uncle Dennis wants a couple jets and some courtside seats at every game and he wants some sponsorships, you do whatever Uncle Dennis wants to make sure that Kawhi is feeling good about where he's at. And if the NBA wants to try to crack down, good luck. But just like in college, there's always a way to skirt around the rules, and there's always a way to deliver the guys that you want the most.
I love Uncle Dennis so much. I've never seen this man. I've never heard him speak. But for some reason, Uncle Dennis became the power player in the National Basketball Association this summer and maneuvered Paul George out of OKC to the Clippers of all places. Big shout to Uncle Dennis. You know what? Because through all of this, whether the Raptors are upset, whether the Lakers are upset, you only get so many chances in your career to exercise your free agency, to really choose your destiny. And I feel like players should use it however they seem fit, and they should manipulate teams like the Raptors. They should use them for leverage. They should do everything they can to get exactly what they want, as Kawhi did. Do you think that this will be a blueprint that other players will follow?
No doubt. Uncle Dennis, Jacoby, is the World Wide West of this NBA decade. He's the guy shrouded in mystery who's making stuff happen behind the scenes for his guy. This is something we will continue to see. When you have the star power that Kawhi has earned, this is what happens, and this is how the game works.
Moving to college football, Nick Saban joined our colleagues right there in the Seaport on Pier 17 at First Take, and here's what he said about working with the media.
You know, really, I think sometimes I'm just trying to get a message across through the media to our team. And when somebody asks me a question that gives me an opportunity to do that, I do it. I think you guys use me sometimes to create a little news. So I'm just going to use you to create a little news with our team.
I love this from Saban. You covered the Warriors closely. Do you think that coaches like Steve Kerr use the media to send messages to players?
Hell yes, they do. Absolutely they do. I love Saban's honesty here, Jacoby, because this happens all the time. I'll give you two quick examples with Kerr from this season. One, in the playoff series against the Rockets, he hated that Houston was flopping all over the floor. So he comes out for his press conference after game one, and he's literally flopping around on reporters inside the press conference as everybody cracks up. But the point was, Houston is doing this, and he sent his message loud and clear. The second one is, as far as the Kevin Durant situation went, he protected Kevin when he didn't want to talk to the media in the middle of the season. He said, Kevin is just going through some stuff. He'll be ready to talk when he wants to. But then, in the next breath, he said, this is what happens when you sign up to play in the NBA and you're making $25 or $30 million a year. This is the pact that you agree to. You can't talk to some people for a couple days and not talk to beat writers for a week. That's not the way it works in 2019. And I think Kerr understands that this is what superstars are required of them. And he was getting his point across to KD in the moment.
It's a good point. Now, ACC Commissioner John Swofford, he said he's concerned about young players not playing football. Do you think that the concern about injury and that football, the stigmatism about the sport, will discourage young people from engaging in the game of football moving forward?
Absolutely, Jacoby. Because there are a lot of moms out there who watch football and say, I am not signing that permission slip. I speak to you as somebody who snapped their leg in half on senior night in high school and had a rod in my leg for a few years. It's part of the game. I love playing football. I love what it taught me. But there is a lot of danger involved, and I think everybody knows it at this point.
We have the honor of being blessed with Jessica Mendoza. Thank you so much for joining the show, Jessica. Last night, the Yankees lost to the Red Sox. The Red Sox put up 14 runs. The Red Sox are hanging on to the wild card. What do you expect from them at the trade deadline?
You know, it's crazy. Coming to this series, is this team going to buy or sell? Which is crazy to think. They won the whole thing last year. They're so dang talented. Some of the numbers are still the same, but them putting the beating that they did against the Yankees, 19 runs, 14 extra base hits. I mean, think about this. Over 2,200 games that these two teams have played against each other. The Red Sox have never scored this many runs, had that many extra base hits. It was the statement they needed to say, we will be buyers, that this is a team that's still contending for the postseason.
So you expect them, because as a Red Sox fan, I thought that they would be sellers. I thought this was a World Series hangover, that this season was a wash. But you think they'll hang on to the wild card and they'll be buyers at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is a team that's going to go out and try to get more bullpen help. That's one of the few weaknesses they have. They're actually one of few teams that still has starting pitching that I don't feel like they need that as a huge hole. Their offense is just stupid. This is the second most scoring team in all of baseball, which I feel like gets overlooked because of the losses and the fact that they haven't been the same team. But if they were to give up now, I just feel like it would be a really bad idea, not only for the Red Sox, but Dave Dombrowski and just the way his nature is. They will be buyers, especially because of this weekend and how important the series is against the Yankees.
Well, if you look at the National League, it seems like the Dodgers are the clear favorites in the National League. What other teams do you expect to challenge them come the postseason?
Kobe, I love, first of all, the Dodgers are sitting kind of what feels like on their own right now, and it's July, so you have so much of the season left to kind of have fun with what are the teams in the National League, and it's the Nationals. I mean, this is a team that starting the season, you're like, okay, this is on paper going to be this amazing team, and they were horrible to start. But if you look at the three-headed monster that's Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin, and then their lineup, Trey Turner, You got Adam Eaton, followed by Anthony Rendon, and then Juan Soto at 20 years old. I mean, this is a team that you do not want to match up against in the postseason. And I feel like there's something different. Maybe it's because they don't have Bryce Harper on the team. I look at Gerardo Parra, who's a bench guy that's come onto this team. I was with them last weekend. Jacoby, they're laughing and having fun. I mean, this was a team, I saw them early in the season. They were stressed. Baseball wasn't fun. And there's something that I feel like I give the credit to Gerardo Parra because of his ability to make this team have fun. They've got a home run Congo line that everybody's doing after they score. They needed to loosen up to let that talent just rise to the top. And I just feel like this team's playing really loose right now. I feel like the expectations have gone away because of how bad their start was. And they're playing the best baseball, honestly, since mid-May. They're even better than the Dodgers when you look at record and all of their numbers.
Well, I'm a big believer in chemistry and having fun and how that translates into wins. But if we're being honest, do you feel like they can actually challenge the Dodgers to win the National League?
Absolutely. And it's because they got Max Scherzer back from the IL. They've got Steven Strasburg and Patrick Corbin. Because it comes down to it, I mean, I'm all about offense and the home runs and all of that fun, sexy stuff. But it comes down to pitching. And there is no better team in all of baseball that has a better top three than the Nationals. And if they go out and get bullpen help, I feel like we're saying that about every single team, by the way, but if they get the best bullpen help, we'll find out in the next 5 days who this team ultimately will be because of who they're going to get after that July 31st trade deadline. They are definitely going to get some guys. But you just look at who they have in Strasburg, Corbin, and Scherzer. You hear a lot about it, but I mean, come on. I mean, if you're going to contend with the Dodgers and that offense, you need three dudes like the Nationals have. And there's no team that has a better starting three than those three.
Well, you mentioned the July 31st trade deadline, and there's going to be some moves. What superstar or what impact player do you expect to be moved before that deadline that will impact the playoff race?
Oh, Jacoby, I was hoping it was going to be Madison Bumgarner because, I mean, think of how cool that would be. I mean, Mad Bum in the postseason with another team that's not the Giants, all of the lore and the everything that comes with him and what he can do. But I really feel like because the Giants and the run that they've gone on, and now they're over 500 and really just the legacy player that Madison Bumgarner is, I think that that has gone away. And so my answer to your question would have been Mad Bum like a week ago, but I don't think the Giants are going to move him any longer.
Yep.
So now you look to guys like Marcus Stroman, which you don't hear a lot about because he's up north in Toronto. No one really talks a lot about him, but oh my gosh, does he have fire and passion and attitude. And honestly, I think sometimes what the game misses. So I'd love to see Marcus Stroman, and I really believe absolutely he is going to end up on a contending team here in the next 5 days. So which team it will be ultimately will be exciting. I think it could be the New York Yankees, but imagine that attitude, that sass, that flavor, everything that he brings in New York in the postseason. Sign me up. I'd be excited to watch.
I will be excited to watch that as well. And one thing I have had my eye on is the Atlantic League. Now, they're using the Atlantic League a little bit as a laboratory for the MLB, and they've instituted the robotic umpires and stealing first base. Do you expect these sort of changes to make their way to Major League Baseball?
I mean, not stealing first base. I love it, by the way. I love it in the Atlantic League. I can't imagine it in Major League Baseball. I love the idea, though. The catcher drops the ball, and you have the opportunity, regardless of the count, to, like, steal first.
Just
and
run.
Even, I mean, you get in a pickle between, like, first and home. Like, I mean, how does that all work? I love it. I do think changes have to happen. And I love that Major League Baseball is experimenting with a bunch of different kinds. One of the ones that I feel like will be implemented next year that Rob Manfred has already talked about is having a three batter minimum that every pitcher has to face. And so you think about bullpen guys, right? A lefty specialist that comes in, faces one batter, and then it's pulled, and then you get another guy coming in, and the manager's every 2 seconds, come on, bullpen, bullpen. It just kills the game, right? I feel like it does. So the fact that it has to be a three batter minimum.
Great point.
Unless it's ending the inning. To me, just to not have that stoppage within innings. Like, if you're going to bring in, now manager has to make a decision. Is this guy going to be able to last at least these three hitters? And maybe ultimately they don't make a pitching change because of it. I love that. It seems like a small change, but I think it'll be big, especially for the game in the later innings.
That's a really good point, and I would like to see that instituted because you see managers bring in one pitcher just to face one batter and then bring in another pitcher, and we have to wait.
And then you're just like
it takes a
banging your head against the table. Like, I just want to see what's going to happen in the eighth.
I just want to see the game. Well, Baltimore brought in somebody, Steve Wilkinson. He was a first position player to record a save in Major League Baseball, and he did it just throwing 50 or 60 miles an hour. Jessica Mendoza, this makes me feel like I could be a relief pitcher in Major League Baseball. Is that true?
I feel like everyone. I mean, I was watching this at home, and I literally was like, I feel like this gives everyone at home like the opportunity. It's like, I could stand up and do that. I mean, you see the like the loop, yes, especially. I mean, just that natural. It almost looks like a knuckleball. Like, it's just, no, that's his fastball. It's just coming in there. As long as you're throwing strikes, literally, that's what I kind of loved about it. Is like, I felt like even my kids are like, I could pitch in Major League Baseball. I could hit 56. I could do that. And it just, I don't know. I get it. It's the 16th inning. They'd run out of everybody. We've seen position players, but to actually get the save. And to be honest, I think being sub 60 miles an hour helped him. That's hard to hit when you're used to seeing upper 90s. Yes.
It felt like a home run derby pitcher. Like someone's dad was out there just like lobbing them into the middle of the plate. And you know what? Got it done. Shout out to Steve Wilkerson. You know, maybe he's got a career as a relief pitcher moving forward. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to your analysis as we move into the playoffs and in the future of Major League Baseball. Who do you have winning it all today?
Whoa, what would you drop in? Like, goodbye, Jess. Oh, by the way, who's winning all of it? It's hard to not like the LA Dodgers right now. And it's an easy team because they're right in the front. Yeah. If I'm going sneaky, like no one's looking at them, I like the Minnesota Twins. I mean, this is a team with all the Yankees and all the talk about, I mean, you have the two powerhouses in LA and New York. That seems like the ultimate World Series. Then you've got this team that's out in the middle of the country in Minnesota, and just what they're doing right now, they're scoring more runs, more home runs. I mean, everything that they've been able to do, their pitching's keeping them in it. These next 5 days with the trade deadline, that's what I get excited to see, because if the Twins make some moves, they can make a run.
Thank you so much for listening to Jalen and Jacoby. We will be back on Monday with a brand new pod to step to. Why is that, Kara?
Done. We're not done. We're not done.
They my little guys. I love them.
What it do, baby?
Yeah.